Welcome to Trinity United Methodist Church in Duncanville, Texas. Today we continue to celebrate Easter as we welcome guest preacher and international missionary Aaron Duplishan. Aaron also happens to be my niece. Join us for the message, Bearing Fruit, Moving from Doing to Being. Today, I'm very happy to announce that we welcome guest preacher and international missionary Aaron Duplishan, who also happens to be my niece, and whom I'm very proud of. And she is here with her family today, Kevin and Josie and Coco and Lucy, and you saw the girls during the processional. And Aaron will be giving us the message today, Bearing Fruit, Moving from Doing to Being.
The Gospel of Luke, chapter 24, verse 13 to 35. The walk to Emmaus. Now on that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them. But their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you are walking along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days?" He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some of the women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him. Then he said to them, 'Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?' Then beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself and all the scriptures. And as they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, because it is almost evening, and the day is now nearly over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed, and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?' That same hour they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, 'The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon.' Then they told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to, them in the breaking of the bread."
Well, good morning again. It's good to be with you today. As Jane said, I'm her favorite niece. She left that part out. But hey, no, she loves us all equally. I'm really happy to be here with you guys today, here with my husband, Kevin, and my three daughters. I hope my aunt hasn't talked us up too much so that you don't leave disappointed today. But as I think she's told you all, we were missionaries in Papua New Guinea for 9 years, and we still work with the organization that sent us out, Pioneer Bible Translators, which is actually very close here, just up the road. And I work in what we call member care. Essentially, I'm a chaplain for all of our missionaries and global workers, and I'm also part of our child safety team, working to keep our kids safe overseas. And Kevin was a Bible translator in Papua New Guinea, and he continues to help in the world of linguistics, helping people learn languages and teaching our new missionaries. So if you don't know where Papua New Guinea is, you are not alone. I did not know where it is until we were headed there. So PNG, say PNG, Papua New Guinea, it's just easier to say PNG, is a part of Oceania. So it's just north of Australia. And it is the most linguistically diverse country on the planet. So it's not very big, but in that space, there are over 800 distinct languages. And in those languages, even more dialects. So it the need for a Bible translation is very, very high there. And that's what we went to be a part of. When we first moved there, we lived in a little town called Madang that was on the northeast coast. And it's about 6 degrees south of the equator, so just hot all the time. And 99% of Papua New Guineans still live in what we would call rural village settings. So like you can see in the picture there, the region that we lived in on the coast, they would build houses on stilts like that. It's very different from our houses here, as you can see. I'll get to that one in a minute. So when we first went to Papua New Guinea, we went through an orientation program. And the goal of that is to help you learn language and culture, and so not just throwing you into the deep end. We called it jungle camp. This is essentially what it was. And you're trained to try to live like Papua New Guineans. And so we learned to build fires and cook over them, and to bathe in the river, wash clothes in the river, all those kinds of things, so that we could know what it was like to live as a Papua New Guinean. And we had a host family take us in and teach us language, teach us culture. And we did a lot of hiking. You can go to the next slide now. That is a lovely picture of a pit toilet. That's where we did our business for a few weeks there. So, but that's real life for Papua New Guineans. And that's super fun with kids, if you can imagine. So all the jungle camp culminates, it ends with a 5-week stay in a village with your Papua New Guinean family, and they teach you their way of life and take you in. Leading up to that 5-week stay, we did a lot of hiking as well. So you're in the jungle, it's like National Geographic, and it's a different climate, and so you're learning how to acclimate to that climate, to hike their terrain. And it can be hard, even for people that go really fit, although a lot of people wind up losing a lot of weight during this time as well. So in part of the preparation, we did a 3-day hike. So you've got your hiking backpack on, just the essentials in it, your mosquito net, of course, your bedding, any food, water, all this, the essentials, some medicine, because inevitably someone's going to get hurt or sick. And you hike all day, and then we slept in a different village each night. And so this was challenging for me. but I wasn't quite at the back of the pack, but I definitely wasn't at the front either. And on the next slide, you can see how that's our family. I forgot about that one. So that's Kevin and myself and our two oldest when we went over. They were just babies. So that's a picture of us in our jungle village living. The slide after that. Yeah, perfect. So you can see like the denseness of the trees in the jungle. And often, you know, you might not be able to see quite like where you're going. You're just trying to follow the path in front of you. So on this 3-day hike, at one point, we had just gone up an incline, and then we got into an area where there was some really high grass. And I had been kind of watching my feet to make sure that I wasn't going to fall. And when I got to the top of this incline, I looked up, I look in front of me, and I don't see anybody. And I look behind me, and I don't see anybody there either. And I had a little bit of a moment of panic. Thankfully, I just kind of kept walking, and I caught up to my group. But it was very easy in this new setting to feel lost and feel alone, but God was gracious to me. So today, coming on the heels of Easter, I wanted to take some time to explore what happened right after Jesus was risen and how that connects with us bearing fruit and finding Jesus on whatever path we find ourselves on. So in the passage we read, we find two disciples. This is Resurrection Day, okay? Jesus has risen this morning, and they're talking about everything that's happened. And they meet Jesus on the road, but they're kept from recognizing him. And the purpose of this lack of recognition is to enable the disciples to be prepared for the revelation of the risen Jesus. They get to have this fresh understanding of all the prophecies and the scriptures that they've been taught their whole lives about who Jesus was and his resurrection. And Cleopas's words about who Jesus was and what happened to him probably reflect the confusion that a lot of Jesus's followers must have been feeling. Jesus was a prophet. They thought he was the Messiah. But all the religious leaders of the nation, all the people who should have embraced and followed him, had rejected him. Then Jesus takes the opportunity to explain to them the scriptures. Words, again, they would have heard their whole lives. Words that they believed to be true, but now they were doubting. Had they put their hope in the wrong person? Now they're nearing their destination, and like very good first century Jews, they practice hospitality, and they invite Jesus to stay with them. And giving him lodging would have kind of been even just the bare minimum of what the hospitality they would have been expected to give. But also providing bread. Even at this point, it's a late hour, but they go ahead and offer bread. And they invite him in also because it's getting dark, and it's not safe to be traveling at night, especially the further and further they've gotten from Jerusalem, probably dealing with robbers and thieves on the road. So it's part of hospitality to offer bread to a guest, no matter how late in the evening. And they've been walking a long time, so they're probably hungry. But by giving thanks and giving bread to them, Jesus takes the role usually held by the head of the household. So he's the guest, and yet he is the one that breaks the bread. And is in this that they recognize him. He would have done this for his disciples, and in this action they recognize him. And in this moment, three things happen very, very quickly. So first, God takes the blinders off. He gives them this ability to recognize Jesus. Second, they recognize him. And third, he disappears. All of this happens pretty quickly. And then they turn to each other, realizing that they had been in Jesus' presence, and they said, "Were not our hearts burning within us? Weren't our hearts on fire when he talked to us about the scriptures, when he opened our eyes?" And then they get up that same night and take 7 miles back to Jerusalem. So we've talked about it's dark, there's probably robbers on the road, and yet these guys take that risk, and they get up, and they go find the rest of the disciples. And when they arrive in Jerusalem, their experience is confirmed, because then they say, yes, Jesus appeared to Peter as well. So I think there's a lot we could glean from this very, very rich story. And what I want to point out here is that before these disciples went, they had been in the presence of Jesus. They had walked with him and listened to him. They'd invited him in. They'd given him the place of honor that would have normally been held by the host in their home. He broke their bread, even though he was their guest. And they would not have gone to spread the resurrection message without first having this encounter with Jesus. You can move forward. So I'm suggesting today that bearing fruit starts with Jesus. So I have wanted to be in vocational Christian ministry from the time I was in high school, and a missionary from when I was in college, and I fully embraced this attitude of, I'm going to do big things for God. I will do anything. I will go anywhere. I really, really wanted to serve God. So going to Papua New Guinea was a dream fulfilled for me, and coming back to the States was very hard. It broke my heart in a lot of ways. Even though it was the right choice for our family. I am a seminary student right now, and last year I had the privilege of reading a book called With by Skye Jatani, which I highly recommend. Jatani presents four different postures that many Christians take in their relationship with God. So living life over God, under God, from God, and for God. And he gently dissects the errors of these postures before presenting another option, which is life with God. And as I read, I was especially struck by the chapter exploring life for God. And I discovered that I have erred by making mission the center of my Christian life. In other words, bearing fruit had kind of become my main thing. And I think I assumed this belief without realizing it, starting from a genuine place of love and faith in God, but missing the truth that God was ultimately calling me to himself. And often throughout our ministry in the last decade, I have felt that God is expecting more from me. And he can't use me until I get it all together. And I remember this very acutely during that time in jungle camp. I remember feeling like I was failing at everything, as a missionary, as a mom, as a wife. I felt like I would never be enough or do enough for God, that he was always waiting for me to get it all together. And as that slide points out, Jatani writes, life for God takes our fear of insignificance and throws gasoline on it. So during my first 18 months in Papua New Guinea, I felt like I was losing my mind legitimately. Very deep in culture shock and language learning while tending to two very small children in a very patriarchal culture. I legitimately thought I was going crazy. And I was definitely not doing big things for God. I still struggle with this sometimes, with this feeling that I'm not doing enough for him and that I'm falling short in all the things that I am doing. And I'm realizing that if I continue to inhabit this posture of living for God, I will miss out on the fullness of God that is available for me here and now. And I will continue to strive to perform for God and miss the treasure that is him. Life with God is different because the goal isn't doing things for God, the goal is God. And if it's true that God's always with me, and I indeed carry his presence with me wherever I am, then my fears and insecurities have to bow to that truth. In embracing life with God and ongoing communion with him, I'll be able to see him all around me. That burning in my heart, I'll begin to recognize that it's him. When I see the beauty outside, when my daughter plays the piano, plays music, beautiful music, when I feel a breeze on my skin or get a hug from a friend, laughing with my family, petting my cat, God is in all of those things. My whole person becomes engaged in finding God, in noticing him, celebrating him, fellowshipping with him and expressing gratitude. We are invited to live, go to the next slide. We are invited to live in ongoing communion with God. And this is made possible through the presence of his Spirit who is with us. And I wonder how many times I have missed God on the road, like the disciples headed to Emmaus. How many times have I not recognized his presence with me? How many times have I felt like I felt on that jungle hike alone? No one in front of me, no one behind me. So what does all this have to do with bearing fruit? I want to offer you this idea today on the next slide, that fruit doesn't just come from the doing, it comes from the being. Being with Christ, inviting him in, learning from him, giving him the honor he deserves, recognizing him. You know, we are seeing in greater and greater numbers Christian ministry leaders who had the appearance of very fruitful ministries, but were secretly living different lives. And I say that just to drive home the point that appearances can be deceiving when it comes to bearing fruit. And the same goes for missionaries. There are countless missionary biographies out there that you can read all about the things that someone accomplished for God. And certainly we can celebrate those things. But I will never forget the words of a veteran missionary who came and spoke at our jungle camp. And she looked us all in the eye and said, "You think you came here to be a missionary, but you really came here to become more like Jesus." That's a pretty big shift for someone who's given up everything in service to God. But The goal isn't service, the goal is God. John says in chapter 15, verses 4 and 5, remain in me, and I will remain in you. For a branch cannot produce fruit if it is severed from the vine, and you cannot be fruitful unless you remain in me. Yes, I, Jesus, I am the vine, and you are the branches. Those who remain in me, and I in them, will produce much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. The two disciples in Luke 24 were with Jesus, but they didn't recognize him. In Jesus' presence, though, their hearts burned. And it was after their eyes were opened that they went out and shared the resurrection message. I'm going to end with another story today. You can see that that's our Papua New Guinean papa and mama and sister. And they had taken us in during those 5 weeks that I talked about and took care of us. And now, remember, I felt like I was going crazy during this time. But I would wake up in the middle of the night and hear that man praying for us out loud by name. So God really put us with a very special family. Towards the end of this five-week stay, I got malaria. And first time to get it, it felt pretty scary, and I was very, very sick. It's kind of like having the flu really, really bad. So remember that picture of the pit toilet? You know, just getting to that was a trial. So my husband had to pack up all of our stuff by himself. We were going to be picked up from the village and taken back into town. And a truck could come up to a certain point to pick us up, but we did have to do some walking in order to get to the truck. And I just remember thinking, okay, I'm going to summon all my strength within me, and I am going to make it to this truck. And no, it was not going to happen. I took about two steps out of that house and just collapsed on the ground. I just was not going to be able to do it. I had no strength. And so that man right there, he's like, okay, well, we're just going to carry you. And I was like, okay. You can see I'm only 5'2", and he is shorter than me and thinner. But he and my mama, they came on either side of me, and they put my arms around both of them, and they took me a ways. And then we got to the bottom of this hill that we were going to have to climb to get up. And he just put me on his back and started walking. And I just, in that moment, even though I was so sick, I felt God's presence, and I felt God saying to me, I have been carrying you all this time. When you were at your weakest, when you felt like you were failing, I have been carrying you. And I'm so grateful that he gave me that moment with my papa to really experience his love. And I had missed God, thinking that I was alone, that I was weak. And I don't want to miss God anymore. I don't want to miss what he's doing. He carried us through a very hard season. Our time in Papua New Guinea continued to be hard, probably for another year. But we continued to press in to him and did have some seasons of fruitful ministry there. We helped get a people group to the finish line to finish their New Testament translation and start the Old Testament. We got to teach at local Bible colleges and prayed for people and helped pay for local kids' education. But had I not had my eyes opened, had I not recognized Jesus with me, I don't think those things would have happened. I don't think we would have made it. I don't think I would have made it. So I want to leave you with a few questions to ponder today on our last slide, and just for you to take with you, write them down or take a picture with your phone and maybe think about them later. But just to meditate on, where might I be missing Jesus right now in my life? Where do you feel your heart burning and you're not recognizing that it's Jesus? And then am I content to just be with Jesus instead of doing things for him? Thank you.
Remember, next Sunday we start a new sermon series, A Total Eclipse of the Sun, Science in the Service of God. And so now receive this benediction. Go this week secure in the love of Christ crucified. May you have the courage to proclaim Christ risen. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. We hope today's service was a blessing to you. Join us every Sunday here on Facebook Live at 11 a.m. Next Sunday, we begin a new sermon series on the intersection of science and faith, a total eclipse of the sun, science in the service of God. You can always access our services through our website, tumcd.org, our Facebook page, our YouTube channel, and our podcast, Jane's Most Excellent Church Adventure. If you like what you're hearing, you can also support our ministry with your gift through our website, tumcd.org. God bless you in the week ahead, and we'll see you Sunday at Trinity United Methodist Church.